Hey everybody, this is Kevin from Nerdy for 30. My co-host Tim Kack and I want to tell you to get out there and vote. Not for your local elections, though. I'm talking about something that really matters, like what TV shows and movies we cover on this podcast. See, the problem is there's too much big stuff coming out in October. You got She-Hulk, you got Lord of the Rings, Game of Thrones, buzzy pop culture stuff like Don't Worry Darling, and then also old seasonal classics like Scream and Hocus Pocus. We put a little bit of everything on the ballot, and we value your time, so we want to know what you want to hear the most. So make your voice heard. Go to nerdyfor30.com, that's nerdy, F-O-R-30.com, to cast your vote and make an impact today. Ladies and gentlemen, hello. And welcome to Nerdy for 30, the podcast where comedian Tim Keck and I talk about nerdy-ish things for 30-ish minutes. My name is Kevin Bauer, and my co-host Tim and I have talked a lot about the fact that when we talk about a good movie, we feel like it makes for a weaker podcast episode because we don't have as much to nitpick. Well, if that's the truth, then get ready for the worst episode of this podcast possible, because we are talking about the greatest movie of all time, Paddington 2.
Yours, mine, and Nick Cage's favorite movie. Oh my God. Beautiful. We did The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent last week in that movie. Nick Cage watches Paddington 2 not once. He watches it twice during that movie, and he cries both times. Kevin, did you cry during Paddington 2?
Absolutely. And it's so funny because I really thought for the most of the movie, I was like, okay, this is fun. There's no way this makes me cry at the end. And as soon as Paddington wakes up from his like fever at the end,
yeah,
and he starts talking about like, oh no, my aunt, like I didn't get her the gift. I was like, don't do it. They're going to do it. Oh my God. Oh my God, they're going to do it. And they milk that so long.
Oh my God, forever, Kevin.
Oh my God.
Hours. The last 35 minutes of the movie is him going down the stairs. It's insane. Oh my God.
We talked last week about how frustrating it can be in a movie when it starts off and it seems like they can explore a whole world and then you lock into one location for the rest of the movie. Paddington did that with the second and third acts, just being Paddington coming down the stairs to greet his aunt.
Oh, you know how like deer are super fast and they can just sprint, you know, at speeds far exceeding a human being. If they wanted to dodge a car, they totally could. But they see the headlights and they freeze and they've got so much time to get out of the way and they just don't. It just comes along and hits them. That was me throughout this movie, because everything that happens is, I'm telling you, the most textbook predictable stuff happens in this movie. I'm like 10 steps ahead of it, and they know that. They milk it, and I'm just a deer standing there waiting for that car to hit me, dude. I was tearing up by the end. I was like, oh my God, his aunt is definitely here. I knew his aunt was 100% going to be there the entire movie. I'm like, there's no way his aunt doesn't come to New York or London. It had New York vibes for me. There's no way his aunt isn't in London by the end of this movie. I knew it. I knew it the whole goddamn time. And the last 10 minutes of the movie is just him. It's just build up to his aunt at the door. And I bit so hard on it, dude. I just stood there and just was holding back, fighting back tears. I wish I was man enough to just openly weep the way I felt inside. It was so much joy, and it's not sad. It's just pure joy and love and seeing something beautiful. I wept the way a real man weeps at a sunrise. It was pure and the dawn of a new day in my life. I'm a different man after coming out of Paddington 2. I get why it's got a 99% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's a phenomenal film. It's a film. It's beautiful. I love it, Kevin.
Can we talk a little bit about the Rotten Tomatoes rating? Because
yes,
you're familiar with the Citizen Kane controversy, right?
No. What's the Citizen Kane controversy?
So when Paddington 2 came out, it was ranked at 100% on Rotten Tomatoes, which led people to say like, oh my God, it's tied with Citizen Kane for being the best movie of all time. And then Rotten Tomatoes added a negative review of Citizen Kane from like the 70s, which dropped the average for Citizen Kane to 99%, while Paddington 2 was still at 100%. So for a while, Rotten Tomatoes' claim was that Paddington 2 was the greatest movie ever made.
Later.
Oh, they ended up adding a negative review for Paddington as well in 2021. So Paddington is now sitting at 99% as well, but is still tied with Citizen Kane for being the most highly reviewed movie on Rotten Tomatoes. What were you going to say?
It's so interesting because, I mean, you look at Rotten Tomatoes and it's a 99% from like the critics. Okay, so it's not the people talking. And I got it. Then looking at the score, it's like a 99, like an 88, which is not a favorable score, I don't think. You know, anytime the critics rate something higher than the audience, I'm like, this is a bad sign. This is a movie I'm not going to enjoy.
You're a man of the people.
I'm a man of the people, as we constantly, you know, remind everyone on this podcast, man of the people. You know, we'll let the critics do what they will. But fuck right. The critics. We're us. We're the people. We're speaking out. And I was kind of watching the movie knowing it was a 99, and the whole time I'm like, there's no way this is a 99. How can it be a 99? How is this a 99? And I don't know if it is. I don't know if it's the best movie ever, but it's really nice. It's just a nice, pleasant time. It's hard to be critical of. Is it the most groundbreaking thing you've ever seen? No. Is it? I don't know. I can't even see is anything else critical about it. It's just pleasant. The comedy is vaudevillian. Kevin, this is my big parallel. What I realized, why this resonated.
Resonated? Yeah.
Resonated. Yeah,
why it made you resign from your job.
Why I quit my job the next day just to get into this point. Nick Cage, a shamanistic actor, he believes in overselling this performative aspect of acting. Everyone in this movie is selling their acting performance the way that Nick Cage sells every acting performance ever. They're all acting in a shamanistic way that I think would really resonate with Nick Cage. They're all putting on a little element of like, this is a goof, but also it's so real. Like one of the hardest, I think maybe the hardest I laughed during the movie is when Paddington calls the house. And like the Mrs. Brown picks up the phone and she's talking and Mr. Brown comes in and he's looking all defeated. And then she yells at him, it's Paddington. And he goes, Paddington? And he's just so genuinely a grown adult man is so genuinely excited to talk to a little bear, which they refer to. Everyone's also just like on board with the bear. Everyone is just bought into this reality. They're all enjoying it and having fun. They're all putting a little extra on it. And I think all of this would really speak to Nick Cage. It makes sense to me why his character in that movie would like Paddington 2.
That's a great observation. I think you're totally right. I think it's the kind of sauce that actors normally put on when they know they're doing a kid's movie. But there's also an art to it because sometimes people are just like, oh, it's a kid's movie, so I'm just going to do fucking whatever. Like, what was the movie with Frankie Muniz and Paul Giamatti? All I remember about it is Paul Giamatti gets like dyed blue somehow.
Oh, that sounds so familiar. I'm not going to think of it, but.
Yeah, we were like 10 or 11.
I'm a Muniz head, but this one's escaping me.
So it's people normally go over the top. They do the right kind of over the top in this. And I'm thinking, too, about the dad, where he's this stodgy man, and his thing is that he wears a shirt and tie, and he's very proper and very British, and he goes to work, thank you very much. And in that scene where he's looking at himself in the mirror, and he's feeling too old, he's reminiscing towards when he was a cool guy. The cutback to when he was a cool guy is the exact right kind of, like, over-the-top cool guy to be funny in that scene. It's incredible. It's just all pitch perfect.
It's so goofy and it's so fun and it's just really nice and really earnest and everyone's bought in, man. It's just a good time. It's so sweet. I honestly, it took me a minute to wrap around my head around like what Paddington's deal is and kind of settled on the fact that he's just like a very nice, innocent, like young boy. Basically, but they made him a bear because like he's not a human. We're not attributing a certain age to him. So he has this kind of ageless quality that endears him to being in prison, but also like working a grown up job, but also he needs people to take care of him and like watch out for him. You know, he's a bear, but he's a little bear. He's not ready for big bear things. But also, you know, he could be, Paddington could be anywhere between 6 and 35. There's no way to know how old Paddington is, but the world is big and London is big and he's still a little bear. And when he goes to prison and the town around him like gets darker and gloomier and people like actually miss him, it's just so sweet and touching and wonderful. But at the beginning of the movie, he like, they have that scene with Hugh Grant where he like repeats something that he heard that was mean and like hurts Hugh Grant's feelings. And there were moments in this where I'm just like, is Paddington like a huge dick? Is he just, I think Paddington like kind of sucks. Like, why does everybody like this guy when he's saying mean things and he cut this guy's hair off and he's just like, he bullied this guy who came in for a haircut and smeared marmalade on it. He's a vandal. Why are people supporting this guy? And just over time, he kind of won my heart.
It's so funny you say that because, Corey Frame, friend of the show, Corey Frame, shout out Corey,
friend of the show,
brought up Amelia Bedelia to me one time, just out of the blue. Just like, dude, do you remember Amelia Bedelia? Why the fuck didn't they fire her? Like, was so mad, like listing Amelia Bedelia's transgressions and just like how inept she was as an employee. And it's just like, she should be looking for work. Like, there's no reason that she should be employed by this family or whoever had her. Paddington doesn't mean it, man. And he's better. He's smarter than Amelia Bedelia. He just gets into some stuff. Every time they would set up a scene with Paddington, I would turn to Lauren and go, oh, this is not going to go good, until they put him in prison. When I turned to her and I was like, mark my words, he is going to turn this place around.
And he does. Oh, and it's so beautiful. And they're all sharing recipes. And now all of the criminals are like best friends and helping him out and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they hang, it's wonderful. That prison, sweet prison sign. Yes. So wait, did you see Paddington 1 or did you jump right to Paddington 2?
I had no idea what was going on. Yeah, I just watched Paddington 2. Did you watch Paddington 1?
Oh my God, yeah. We watched.
Why
it.
Would you
to
do that?
Fair, we watched it for the first time because we heard it was great. I've been told by everybody how good these movies are. We hadn't seen 2 yet. We watched 1 for the first time, seriously, maybe 2 months ago, like very recently, and we're thoroughly charmed by it. It was very, very nice. I guess that was my big question that I wanted to get from that was whether it's more of an impressive feat for Paddington 1 to be extremely good because nobody knew that it was going to be extremely good when they made it. Or more impressive that Paddington 2 was able to maintain and debatably top the standard set by Paddington 1. Because they're both terrific.
Well, in Massive Talent, mm-hmm. Nick Cage, they're discussing it and Pedro Pascal's like, Paddington 2 is my favorite movie. And then they just go right to watching Paddington 2, which I felt, you know, in the spirit of this podcast, I was like, I have to just dive right into this. And there was a moment up top where I'm like, what the, there's a bear living with a family in London? This doesn't make any sense. How, you know what my first thought was, man, I got to find out how this happened. the opening like 5 minutes of this movie sold me on Paddington 1. I'm definitely going to watch it. I got to know what happened. I need some background, but also you totally don't need a background. Like once you're like, this is a little bear. He lives in London. Nobody's freaked out that he's a fucking bear. And he just does normal people stuff. It's like, this is great. This is great. How's he related to the Browns? I don't know. His aunt just sent him to London and he just found some people that are now just willing to take on the financial burden of raising a little bear cub in the big London city. It's a lot.
There's so much to it, and it's going to simultaneously break and warm your heart. I guess minor spoiler alert for Paddington 1. They never address
the fact that
he's a bear. It's never a thing where it's like, a bear can talk. It's the right move. Just get past that. We're all past that as an audience. We don't need to see the 1 millionth scene where James Marsden is in a car with a CGI animal trying to figure out why the CGI animal can talk to him on this road trip. You know,
that is a great pull. It, the one thing that I thought was really great in this was just like, this was so vaudevillian. This was like an old Looney Tunes cartoon where it's like he's putting up a ladder to wash a window. And you're exactly what you're saying, where it's like, this isn't going to go well. And somehow he's hanging from something. He doesn't weigh the right amount, so he's falling down. I mean, it's just, the humor in this is so just pleasant and pretty harmless that it's hard not to get just sucked into this.
Oh, yeah. There's a scene in it for the physical comedy aspect, too. There's a scene in it where he's going through the cogs in the clock tower in the prison.
Yes.
And he comes out of it. And I think it was a Charlie Chaplin reference. I meant to look that up. And I think it was a Charlie Chaplin reference because he comes out of it with the mustache in the middle. And it can't be a Hitler reference. It has to be Chaplin.
No, it can't. It's got to be a Chaplin thing. I was thinking, I went through a real Abbott and Costello phase like growing up.
Really?
Like, yeah, it just felt like that. It felt like kind of bumbling. I mean, the whole time there's so many shots that are just him, you know, getting his like fur dirty and sneezing, and like all of a sudden his fur's clean, of like touching a ball and all his hair stands up, of him being wet. There's like so much visual comedy with the bear. And just in general, like the visuals are so nice and pleasant, and just you're constantly being stimulated by something, which is incredible. It's so great. Another thing I realized is that anytime I see a British actor, I'm always like, how do I know them? And it's always Harry Potter.
Yeah.
every actor in this movie, I was like, well, I'm pretty sure I've seen, it's like Harry Potter. All these people have been in Harry Potter. Every British actor ever apparently has been in Harry Potter. It's incredible. It's nice to see that they're getting other work, though.
Man, I wanted to find, this is bizarre this came up because I was thinking about this apropos of nothing today. I want to design like the Nerdy for 30 Triple Crown, where I'm trying to decide if it seems like it should be trying to find the actors that have been in Harry Potter, the MCU, and Star Wars. Or like, there's got to be like entertainment franchises we can find. Like maybe you've been in a Pixar movie, you've been in maybe Marvel or DC, and you're in Indiana Jones or something. Like we got to find like the top grossing entertainment franchises of all time and determine what the Triple Crown looks like.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've heard Vin Diesel is like the winner of this because he's had like multiple franchises. He's had Guardians of the Galaxy, not that important, I guess. He's having a small role in that. The Fast and Furious, which is gigantic. He did Chronicles of Riddick, which had multiple movies. Mm. And then he did Triple X, which had multiple movies. Like somehow he's just been like such a big franchise guy and like in all this repeat stuff. I mean, there's guys like maybe The Rock's done some, I don't know how many like just franchises The Rock's built necessarily, but.
Interesting. Well, because yeah, The Rock's there, but The Rock would never be in Harry Potter. You know, or you have like Stallone, who has appeared in the MCU because he was in the post credit scene. He was in Guardians of the Galaxy too. I could
That's
see
true.
Him doing a Star Wars cameo, but there's no way we get a Stallone Harry Potter character.
We that need would be our
so
version.
Fucking fun.
We need our version of like an EGOT, but it's like someone who's won an Oscar, someone who's been in a Marvel movie, someone who's been on Comedy Central. And like there needs to be like just a weird bubble of like all of our points.
We're circling around the same idea.
Has
here.
Met Nathan Fielder in real life.
Oh my God.
And you know, there is this perfect person out there. I believe it. And I think we will find them and our lives will be complete.
I think they're going to be surprising. I think whoever it is, I think they're going to be a surprising pick. It's going to be like fucking Kumail. It might be Kumail.
It could totally be Kumail. Kumail might be the guy.
Huh. We got to get
not
him
in Harry Potter, though.
One of these Harry Potters. He'd be fun in a Harry Potter.
Oh, he'd be great. I mean, they're in America now, so he could totally just be in it.
Oh, that'd be sick. Damn. Paddington 2, though.
Paddington 2, incredible, so pleasant. Another incredibly satisfying thing that happens in this movie is that everyone in the Brown family, one, they're all together all the time, which is so funny because like so many times I was like, why is grandma here? But grandma's like in the background. They're like investigating stuff and it's always the five of them. They're like trying to jump from one train to another. Grandma's like, I'm going. I'm like, what is happening? You have this old lady hanging off a train and like leaping to, she's like doing an action scene. I'm like, this is an incredible world that they have built. And all of the characters have their thing, and they all have a somewhat satisfying character arc. Yeah. All of them, they're like, this kid, he's into trains. And then at the end of the movie, they're like, hey, you want to drive this train? He's like, fuck yeah. I've been waiting my whole life for this. I'm not J-Bone anymore. I'm whatever my real Jonathan. Call me Jonathan. And I like trains. Like, I think he says that at some point. Mm-hmm. My name's Jonathan and I like trains. And then just starts driving a train. And I'm like, this is my shit.
I'm Jonathan,
this is the best.
And welcome to Jackass.
I wish every movie just did that, where they're just like, hey, I'm Tyler. My thing is, I fuck apple pies. Get ready for the time of your life. And like, that's just at the beginning of the movie. Everyone just kind of tells you what the thing is. You talk about that all the time, of like, when you meet a character, they need to be doing the thing that they're going to be doing for the rest of the movie. And they do that in this.
Yeah.
They do it. Somehow this girl's newspaper, which everyone in this town is secretly reading. I don't know how she went from having... This girl starts a newspaper, has a whole printing press, has everything running, and then she goes, okay, now we just need news. And as far as I can tell, all she writes about is Paddington. She's done multiple newspapers, pages. I mean, these are thick newspapers, and everyone in the town is secretly reading them. Mm-hmm. There's like a whole underground network of people reading the newspaper that some child did just to find out what's going on with Paddington. It is just an incredibly pleasant, lovely movie.
Are you kidding? I would love to read an underground newspaper distributed by a child on my block talking about the neighborhood bear. That sounds like I would sign up for that email newsletter in a heartbeat.
It would be great. You're 100% right. I would love it. I mean, I wish the world really worked that way. I mean, Paddington 2 is like what the world could be, you know, if everyone had healthcare and, you know, there weren't any wars.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a weird part of the canon of the Paddington universe. This World War II never happened.
Paddington stopped it. He just went over there. He gave a hard stare, and the Germans put down their guns and dyed their uniforms pink. It was really beautiful.
Dude, I feel like I came at this movie and like the acclaim of the Paddington series, the way that background characters act when they first meet Ted Lasso, where it's like, all right,
never seen it.
Are you shitting me?
Never seen Ted Lasso.
Tim, what?
Oh yeah, I'm not just throwing more money at Apple, you know, I'm a Bezos boy.
All right, my God.
Fuck Tim Cook or whoever the Apple guy is.
Bezos all the way, baby. Tim Apple. Second
Tim Apple. Screw you, Tim Apple. Dude.
If you
Amazon, baby, give me another white guy fighting crime. I love it.
I've got good news for you. It's that if you like Paddington, Ted Lasso is the same energy for two seasons of a show. It's like, it's wonderful. Just like Ted Lasso and Paddington are so similar as characters, and they both take such a good approach to finding whatever's good about the people in their lives. I mean, I agree with Javi from The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. This movie reinforced that I want to be a better person. I want to be a better part of my community. Like that scene that you mentioned where it's seeing what the neighborhood looked like after Paddington left really drives home how much of an impact you can have, you know, just the little things, talking to people at your local grocery store, getting to know people around the corner. I just read a book, called How to Do Nothing, where part of the premise is to, you know, be more a part of your community. It's about getting you more unplugged from the internet and more plugged into where you live and the people that you live with. And it's the same way, I guess. I'm drawing lines between multiple references here, but there's like a Jonathan Franzen thing. He's the dude that did, I didn't read the big book, Infinite Jest. No, who did Infinite Jest? David Foster Wallace?
I don't know.
I guess he gave a commencement speech one time talking about how we view being stuck in traffic as an inconvenience, or being at the grocery store when it's busy as an inconvenience, when really if we just apply a different perspective to the situation, we are connected to other people in our community and other people in the world, and just how amazing of an experience that is if you just look at it a little bit differently. And there's a guilt that comes with that of saying like, I let so much of these things be inconveniences to me when really this is the world and I'm a part of that world, whether I have been acting like it or not. And Paddington makes me want to act like it. Gotta fucking take a deep breath after that. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, that was all bullshit, but I do respect that idea. Sitting in traffic, I don't think will ever be satisfying for me, but maybe you got your own little thing. You're on a podcast. He definitely didn't say that about, you know, riding the New York subway, because that is a shithole. It will always be a shithole. I think it's really reminded me of like college. I've heard that analogy a lot, of like, a, you know, the reason, one of the reasons why people love colleges is because it's like maybe the only time in your life that you're a part of a walkable community. Mm. And like, you walk to get food, you walk to class, you walk to your job, you walk to your friends, you walk to the football stadium. You're like in a small little ecosystem where you kind of build your world. And there's something kind of nostalgic about that on this kind of, a lot of this takes place like on one little street. You know, he goes outside and all the neighbors are there, and then the neighbors all come out and like push the car at the end. It is like kind of one little small walkable, you know, everybody. There's something very, very charming about that. And I think you're right that that is something I think ultimately that all of us are looking for. All of us are really looking for our tribe. And I think there's some small part of every person that wishes they had a little world like Paddington does. I mean, it's really beautiful and it really resonates. Also, I mean, the ant thing, which hit us both hard, I'm sure that's something that resonates with a lot of people, too. Everyone's got those people in their lives that they wish they could give something back to and aren't able to do it. And just the joy and the, you know, thinking about whoever you want to be able to give these great gifts to is really like a powerful thing and really resonated with me. I mean, this bear was the perfect vessel for so many emotional choices. It was really, really wonderful.
That's incredible.
What do you think of Hugh Grant?
I adored him in this. I absolutely adored him in this. The first movie, I won't spoil who the antagonist is, but the first movie has an antagonist who is still good, but isn't good in the same way. And Hugh Grant just fucking gets it. Like, he just showed up. The premise of this character that is arguing with himself with all these different roles that he's played in the past, and it's got all the costumes around. It's incredible. It's fun to watch. It's fun to listen to. Adore him. He's the best.
Yeah. I still compare every character like this to Jim Carrey's like Lemony Snicket. Mm. That's like me and my sister's like favorite movies, or one of them growing up. I swear that the guy, Jim Carrey, it's his best role. He just absolutely crushes as like Count Moloff or whatever. I don't know what the count. He's like the evil count, and he's doing a similar thing where he keeps putting on disguises and like terrorizing these children. And it's such a great trope of just like the villain who's like putting on all these goofy disguises and getting into character and going so above and beyond to do this simple thing. Like what's that machine called? Like the Rube Goldberg machine. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about? Where it's like an elaborate way to get to the same thing. All of these like childhood villains, like kids movie villains, are like Rube Goldberg machining themselves, where it's like, there's got to be an easier way than what you're doing right now. But you're straight up, you know, dressing up like a bearded guy and like breaking into this place to steal a book. And now you have to go through 8 costume changes in order to get this. At one point, he's like a nun, and then he transforms, I think, just into the Pope. Like, and somehow that's like a good getaway disguise. Like, it's really just so over the top and fantastic. It's just very pleasant. I mean, he's just very pleasant in it. All the characters are so pleasant.
And the movie is so pleasant to look at. It was really refreshing to see a movie that had such a distinct visual style, was pulling off really, really cool effects, like the pop-up book effect that it was doing. The like dollhouse effect with the jailbreak was incredible. It was doing all of this really, really neat stuff and had this like wonderful color palette to it, but wasn't a Wes Anderson movie. Why aren't more movies... striving to be really visually striking like this? Like, one of the things that stuck with me so much about Everything Everywhere All at Once was just how visually arresting it was. And I feel like if I'm listing the movies that I know of that do that kind of stuff, it's like Grand Budapest Hotel, Paddington 2, and Everything Everywhere All at Once.
I mean, it's why people lost their shit for Avatar, right? Is like, It's a straight up visual spectacle. I mean, it's, the story's bad. I mean, it's Pocahontas about a bunch of, you know, people who commit bestiality, and it looks great. So people are like, yeah, it's cool that he's fucking that horse. Like, go get him. I can see every strand of your hair being interwoven with the strands of hair in this weird alien horse. The same strands of hair that you use to have sex with the other people that look like you. So this is cool. I love that I can see all of this. And there's no other real reason to I mean, people like this visual thing. It's crazy that people don't look for that stuff. You're right. Now you only get that in like Marvel movies, where it's a massive CGI event, maybe. You got some real eye candy to look at. I mean, otherwise those things aren't really happening. And none of those are approaching the same kind of artistry that Paddington does. You're right. There's that scene just kind of for no reason. They're like, okay, but this is the pop-up book now. He's in the pop-up book with his aunt. Okay, now they're doing an escape. So we're just going to cut out and do the doll. The dollhouse thing was so cool, so unnecessary. Yeah. But they kept making these like unnecessary choices just to look cool. And it was totally worth it. It was so good. Kevin, have you ever had marmalade?
Never have. Never in my life. Have you?
No, I was like, it's got to be just jelly. It is not jelly. He's putting oranges in this stuff.
Yeah.
It's like a citrus. It's like a citrus. I don't think grapes are citrus. I have a lot of grape jelly. I'm a jelly fiend, but you know, some blueberry. I'm a berry, but jellies are berries. Marmalade, apparently, it's like lemons and oranges and other citrus. I mean, you can name more citrus than I can, Kevin. You know the citrus.
We agreed. Like the back of your hand. Started on this. Yeah.
But, yeah, you know, I won't, but yeah.
We got citrons. Look, we got limes. I don't get me started.
Okay. No. Well, I'm kind of going to cut you off right there before you. We can spend the rest of the podcast just you listening. Right. I mean, you can do a couple more if you want.
Okay,
but
mandarins. Don't. I would prefer not to go into this.
Okay, we'll cut you off. We'll cut you off there. But Kevin knows all of the citruses, and apparently all of them go in marmalade, and it sounds delicious. It looks delicious. It seems like everybody thinks it's delicious. I mean, would you be excited about biting into a piece of bread that just tasted like oranges?
Not necessarily, but I would be excited to try it now based on this movie.
I'm very excited to try it. It's like, you know, anytime you saw Winnie the Pooh, it's like, God, I just got to get my hands on some honey. Someday when I'm a grown up, I'll just be able to buy like a whole thing of honey.
Yeah,
man. You know, this is someday, a dream of mine. I've never done it. I don't know why I've never done it, but I always think about it. Is I just really want to just take a bite out of a honeycomb.
Oh, it's
and
great.
Like, I've never done it, and I just really want to. And I've seen them at the store, and there's just a jar with a honeycomb in it, and I'm always like, someday. And I don't know why I just don't do that for myself. Like, that's self-care. I mean, every TikToker I follow was saying, you got to take care of yourself, you know, get 8 hours of sleep. People aren't promoting the honeycomb bite, and I'm here for it. I think I just got to do it, Kevin.
Dude, there is an opening for the honey bite TikTok community. You got to do it. I've done it. It's wonderful. I would do it again. I probably will do it again. The wax of the honeycomb, the texture, you know, it's not as, it doesn't react the way you think it's going to chewing, but by no means is it bad. By no means, no mean. It's good.
No mean. It sounds incredible. I think Paddington 2 has inspired me to live my honeycomb dreams. I think that'd be nice. And marmalade. I don't even know where you get marmalade. Can you get it here? Do we have to like illegally import it? Do we have to smuggle it, you know, in our butts from the UK?
Yeah.
Back here?
That's the only way.
Well, that'll be good. Kevin, you got any other beefs or thieves? You got any beefs or thieves? You got any beefs? Do you have a single beef for
I
this
got
movie?
No beefs for this movie. I have nothing.
It's so funny. It was so funny to me at the end when the prisoners are in a plane and Paddington is essentially going to drown, which is, I was like, it got real dark for a second.
Dude, it got
Paddington
scary.
I was terrified. And it's like, again, it's so pretty. It's like, there's no way he drowns here. But for a second,
can you
think he's going to drown.
Can you fucking imagine if they committed to that?
I was thinking the whole time, if this prison escape just turned into like a gory shootout and someone just gets fucking gutted by like a security guard. Oh, that would have been so goddamn funny. I think someone needs to do an edit of this, like an R-rated Paddington edit, and just like edit in just some gruesome violence, you know, just in the background. It would just honestly take this movie to a whole nother level.
Let me connect the dots that you've been dropping throughout this entire episode without even realizing it. You mentioned that London in this movie was giving you New York vibes. You mentioned that the subway will always be a disgusting, awful place no matter what. You mentioned that you want a violent shootout in a prison. Tim, I think our new calling is to make a parody book version of Paddington set in New York City. We call it Raddington. He's a giant fucking rat. He has to go to Rikers.
I was going to say Paddington 3, Paddington goes to Rikers. Like, how great. Oh, it'd be incredible if he went to Rikers and like introduced real prison reform and maybe the gangs would stop running the place. Rikers is a scary place. Yeah. But I think Paddington could fix it. I mean, really, he's our only hope.
I think he is. And with that,
God, effing love Paddington.
So do I. Ladies and gentlemen, do you love Paddington as well? Let us know. Send us an email, nerdy430@gmail.com. That is the number 30 on the end there. We'll read it on air. We got another mailbag episode coming up soon.
We'll have more.
We'll have more.
Eventually, we'll start sharing maybe in advance what they are. Yeah. But until then, keep listening, friends. Yeah. You know, I'm on like Google right now looking at the cast. And Knuckles is listed with a K, but I'm pretty sure his tattoo just had the N.
Yeah, and the captions for the movie just had the N as well.
So someone's got to fix Google.
Yeah.
Let them know, my boy Knuckles, it's an N, baby. Knuckles, also, he puts his hands out. The introduction of the character is him pressing his hands in like he's going to do a Power Rangers transformation. Like he's ready to morph. He crisscrosses his wrist and goes, and Knuckles, like the same energy that Billy would say Triceratops. It's just like
that is and his I Power Rangers animal.
Knuckles,
just a giant fist, just a giant robot fist, and then when it like latches onto the Megazord, it's not the Megazord's fist; it's its face. It just has a fist for a face, because that's the energy he brings to the team.
Fist, face, and then his finishing move is just like a headbutt, but it's like a punch. It's like a face punch. Incredible.
Huge fan.
The Paddington 3 Power Rangers crossover we never knew we needed.
It's coming. God.
And
it's
the criminals at the end incredible. Just all get off because they're like, I forget what the thing, the judge is like, they're changed men. Yep. Good for them. We don't know what they're in prison for. Murder?
All of them.
All of them were doing murder. A bunch of murderers.
Yep.
I'm glad they're free.
Me too. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Stay nerdy.
Bye.
Bye.
Oh, man.